As most of you are probably aware, we process about 7 million non-immigrant visa applications a year of all categories, including students. Out of that 7 million, only about 2.5% require special additional security screening back through Washington here. The rest of them, everybody is screened through automated processes, name check-based processes, and the biometric, the fingerprint check. But 2.5% of the 7 million will also require some additional work back here. That includes some students, not a whole lot. It does include a certain percentage of advanced postgraduate researchers, science researchers, because of concerns over sensitive and dual-use technology. Those clearances coming back to Washington we made some changes in the process without having the resources to deal with it. Back in the summer of 2002, we thought, unfortunately, that it was important that those changes be made despite the gap in resources, and that caused a really unpleasant year to follow. Beginning right after we did that, though, we started devoting additional staff and money, systems expertise, and coordination with the other agencies in town that do this work so that we were able to speed up the process to the point where you shouldn't actually have problems for the most part. The Mantis check, the one for sensitive technology, dual-use technology, that check used to take 3 weeks before 9/11. We peaked in the winter of 2003 at 72 days on average. Now we're down to less than 14 days on average. So we're faster now than we were before 9/11 with those types of checks. And again, they're only affecting a small percentage of applicants anyway, almost no undergraduates. I could try to figure out a way to check, but I'm not sure we would ever check an undergraduate for a Mantis.
And what do we do in follow-up if there is something taking longer than a couple of weeks? Is there a particular channel?
Yeah.
Do you want to recite your phone number and email address?
I can attest to the rapid improvement in the Mantis clearance process because you're not bothering me anymore. When I came into the job in August of 2003, this was an issue, and I spent a lot of time following up. And again, the Department of State's role is sort of a coordinating office. The office that does that is actually called the Office of Coordination because they farm these things out to people with the expertise. But in the summer before, in the summer of 2004, there were certainly less, and this past summer, I had very few to follow up. For those who want to follow up, you're certainly welcome to email me at tatuchmb@state.gov. 14 days is an average. Sort of the bulk of them are done within a month. So certainly, a month is still a little early to follow up. Again, I think the figure was, last figure I saw was 98% get resolved within a month. That doesn't help the other 2%. But again, I think the important thing to remember is for these things that do take longer, that they're not just sitting around, that they're being actively pursued. I also just want to point out that certainly the increased scope of Mantis has been with us for a few years. It shouldn't surprise people. It may surprise some people who might sort of be on the edge of what is considered a dual-use technology, but I think for the vast majority of people who are involved in these fields, they know people, they have their colleagues who've gone through the same thing, maybe they were fellow students or professors or things, or other people that they collaborate with, they've gone through it, and those folks shouldn't be surprised. And they really just need to plan accordingly. Most visa problems really can be addressed over time, and it's when somebody comes in that, I got a 5 o'clock plane, I'm sorry. But if given enough time, most of these problems work out.
Let me ask just a few more questions of clarification on Mantis. Is this a matter of consular officer discretion in terms of deciding whether a Mantis is to be sought or not? In other words, is it merely a matter of the consular officer looking at the technology alert list and saying that a Mantis is required, or is there some discretion in determining, for example, the proposed activity in the U.S.?
Both. Actually, the technology alert list is a guide that's reviewed and published once a year for consular officers, breaking out, how do I describe this? It breaks out the areas of technology that are of particular concern to the various export control regimes that exist in the United States. We don't have a single unified export control model in this country, but certain things are administered by state, some by the Department of Defense, some by Commerce, and some by Energy. The technology alert list is a tool to help consular officers who are not scientists figure out what sorts of technologies might be of interest to the U.S. government for screening purposes. We're always trying to strike a balance, obviously. We train consular officers to get them using this technology alert list as effectively as possible. If we err too far and start trying to do too much technical training for consular officers, the process slows down. We're asking too much of officers that are looking at other things as well. If we don't give them enough training, if we don't put enough detail in that technology alert list, they'll start sending in too many cases for clearance. We do work with the officers both in the basic training and on an ongoing basis with quarterly reports, with feedback, particularly if they've requested a Mantis clearance for somebody who didn't need one. We go back out to them and explain why in that particular case we don't think it was necessary. Certain nationalities are of particular proliferation concern, and the officers have to factor that into account. Someone with a particular specialty from one country, vice another country, that might be of more or less interest. So in the end, there's a little bit of discretion on the margins. At the core of the screening requirement is fairly clearly defined, and we expect the officers to be following it as we work together with them.
One of the things that has seemed difficult, if I put myself in the shoes of the Department of State, is that you're asking another government agency to perform a clearance for you, and yet people are pressuring you to give a quick response. So do you have any official clout, or is it a bully pulpit kind of an effort?
You mean in order to speed up
clearances?
Yes and no. We do coordinate with other agencies on all these clearances. Basically, for the most part, if applicants are falling in that 2.5%, it's because the input of other agencies in this town are needed. We have the ability to expedite certain cases with them. Their infrastructures are strained to a large extent. There are a lot of cases coming through, and so we're limited to how many we can expedite in any given. Like, some of the agencies will actually give us a number per week that we can request, and so if we did a trade show out of Beijing and used up all those numbers, then everybody else has to wait for the following week. There's that sort of thing. We work with them. We have the coordination division is filled with people that work every day with the other agencies to coordinate both procedures and technology. We spend a lot of time with them making sure that we actually, in this regard, this wasn't true several years ago, but State is the leader in technology on the consular side in the government. Our name check systems are, I think, better than most others, and certainly the things we use to support and track these clearances are better. So what we've done is we've designed them, modified them in such a way that they're usable by other agencies, and we spend time working with them, training them, getting them to use the equipment, and then working together to try to figure out ways to make sure that the processes are targeted and effective, that we're not screening any more people than we really need to, and then that we're doing it as quickly as we can within reason. Mantis, for example, is probably a two-week process. I can't imagine having serious technical review of somebody's publications and resume and intended travel in the United States taking much less than 10 days to 2 weeks, no matter how good we get at it.
Do you recommend, though, that people provide that information right up front, their resumes, their publications? Will that speed things up?
They should bring it, yes. And again, this is going to apply. Mostly, you're going to see this with postdocs. We're talking about serious, specialized research, not undergraduate degrees in biology.
So there's an internal visa bulletin on the number of expedite requests by agencies that can be sought in any given period of time.
Okay.
I have to mention one thing. You talked about being the most advanced agency in terms of technology, but there's one area where I think you could make some improvements, and that is the user-friendliness of the non-immigrant visa application and the supplemental form, in the sense that in order to get the barcoded version, you have to work within the confines of that software. And it's not forgiving if one needs to go a few pages back and then forward, and
right.
You can lose the documentation and have to type the whole thing over. So if you could put a little focus on that, that would be much appreciated.
Theos, it's the security clearances that we're really good at.
Yes, okay. I can imagine that's true. All right. Let's turn to another subject involving policy coordination. How has the process of working in coordinating immigration compliance policy and benefits policy with the Department of Homeland Security work. A long while back, there was issuance of a Department of Homeland Security, Department of State memorandum of understanding that would help in the shared responsibility. Can you give us a progress report on that?
If I had had the time to use some prepared remarks, I think one of the things you might have noticed, Prakash and Susan and I did not compare notes, but some of the same themes were repeated throughout what those two said and what Martin and I were preparing to say. I think the coordination actually is working very well. There are resource issues DHS is a new organization. Susan can jump in and correct me here, but I mean, it's a new organization, and so the policy shop there is being built. We're identifying opposite numbers for particular issues, sometimes on an ongoing basis, on an ad hoc basis, as a particular problem arises. But the memorandum of understanding that was signed back 2 years plus ago on implementation of Section 428 of the Homeland Security Act, that's the section that gave DHS oversight over visa policy, the implementation has been fine. It has made some things that we would have done alone before now must always be done formally with DHS. And actually, I shouldn't say alone before. Some things we would have done in coordination with INS, but without perhaps the formal clearance process, now go through a more formal clearance process. So that can add some time. It certainly adds a formal requirement for liaison that was more informal before. But by and large, I think the two agencies are, at least on the benefits, on the sorts of things we're talking about here today, we're more on the same sheet of music than I can remember us, you know, ever being. This is not a bad working relationship.
Just to make a little shift a bit, one of the concerns that we often hear, and especially should have been delivered in a timely fashion. One of the things that we're noticing is that appointments for the embassy are further out than in the past.
Well, that's certainly true in some consulates and some embassies for some classes of visa, but the Department of State has made a promise, and we've told our consular officers to do this, to expedite any application of an F or M or J visa. And that will cut a wait of weeks or months into days. If that's not happening, we want to know about that. We've told consular officers to put on their websites exactly how to do that. Now, what that does not, unfortunately, apply to people coming in on B visas, because it's very hard for us to figure out, well, this is a B visa who needs to be expedited. But for Fs and Js, that has certainly since I've been in this job, that has been department policy. Because we realize that students and exchange visitors have to deal with schedules that
should have been delivered in a timely fashion. One of the things that we're noticing is that appointments for the embassy are further out than in the past.
Well, that's certainly true in some consulates and some embassies for some classes of visa. But the Department of State has made a promise, and we've told our consular officers to do this, to expedite any application of an F or M or J visa. And that will cut a wait of weeks or months into days. If that's not happening, we want to know about that. We've told consular officers to put on their websites exactly how to do that. Now, what that does not, unfortunately, apply to people coming in on B visas, because it's very hard for us to figure out, well, this is a B visa who needs to be expedited. But for Fs and Js, that has certainly since I've been in this job, that has been department policy. Because we realize that students and exchange visitors have to deal with schedules that are not of their own making. They have deadlines. We realize that in some countries, how the home country academic calendar sort of matches up with our academic calendar, that there's a sort of a narrow window. But we've guaranteed that you will have an appointment. Okay, unless you're sort of like saying, oh, I just got my I-20 and classes start tomorrow. We're not that sympathetic about somebody like that. But if people have their I-20s in time, you know, our commitment is to make sure that you have an application that will allow you to make the start of classes. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm Dorothy Mora from the Department of State. I want to thank Bill for this opportunity to talk to you today, and thank you all of you for coming out to learn more about what the Department of State does for international education. The most important thing I'll say today that I hope that you remember is that the Department of State has Education USA centers overseas, that they exist, and that they're there to help you recruit students to your campus if you're a U.S. institution. If you're a U.S. university representative, they're there to help you get more students from your country to U.S. universities. One of the things that Martin mentioned was the importance of having students able to articulate their plans for studying in the United States. That's another goal of the Education USA centers, is to have students able to know the broad diversity of U.S. higher education. If you don't have immediate name recognition, if you're not a Harvard or a Princeton, and you want your name out there for international students to be aware of, please send your information to those Education USA centers and let them know what makes your university unique. We have several advisor training programs where we bring overseas advisors to visit U.S. universities, and I'm really happy to see campus hosts out there who have hosted our advisors. For instance, one of the advisor training programs recently went to a university in Nebraska and learned about their GOAT research program that they had. And I'm sure that students from overseas who wanted to focus on GOAT research might not think of Harvard as their first choice, or maybe they shouldn't, but this is something they might want to tell the consular officer about why they're going to study at this particular U.S. institution. I'll go very briefly through my PowerPoint. I'll try to be as quick as possible. Please feel free to stop me at any time and call out a question. I'm happy to answer questions now or immediately after this presentation. Or you can email me at moradd, that's M-O-R-A-D-D, at state.gov. As I said, the Department of State's mission is to send the message that the U.S. welcomes foreign students. We feel that students studying together from around the world is the best way to achieve a more peaceful future. And we do this through our overseas Education USA centers. We work through your institutions, U.S. colleges and universities, to strengthen exchanges. And we also support research on educational exchange. You can find out about Education USA centers by clicking on the state website. I also have bookmarks available outside with the URL on them. Please pick up a bookmark. It's the best way to find out about our programs and where centers are located. If you scroll almost all the way to the bottom of the state website, you'll see the educational and cultural affairs information. And if you click on that, you'll not only get information on the recent summit for university presidents that took place a couple of weeks ago, but also about the Fulbright program, the Gilman Scholarship Program for U.S. students, and Education USA. Clicking on that through the exchange's website, you'll get resources for U.S. institutions. One of the most important of these is how your university, if they would like to recruit more international students, and a key way to do that is through your website. Outside on the table out there, I have another handout about how to have an internationally friendly website. And this contains key information that will help you help students find out about your university. One of the most important things that I see when I look at U.S. university websites, or that I don't see, is accreditation information. This is what helps students determine if your university is legitimate or not. And having that information about who you're accredited by and right on the first page is a tremendous help for international students. One of the key questions we get asked all the time are, why don't Education USA centers all have the same name? This is because we don't really pay rent or salaries for the advisors. We work with host institutions in other countries. In some cases, in Africa primarily, the Education USA centers are located in the U.S. Embassy. In most other regions of the world, they're located in a Fulbright Commission. And again, Fulbright Commissions don't always have the same name. In Indonesia, for instance, it's the American Indonesian Educational Foundation or Japan U.S. Educational Foundation. But if you look at the bookmark and the URL, it will give you the contact information no matter what the name is for every Education USA center. We have 500 overseas, almost 25, over 25 million contacts a year. And we estimate that between 50 and 90% of those contacts, of those in the United States, contact an Education USA center. It's very important for them to do that because centers not only help them choose the most appropriate institution, but also give information on how best to prepare for the visa interview, scholarship information, testing information. They do pre-departure orientations if you're an embassy official and you would like to learn more about what centers are telling students about studying in the U.S. and want to make connections with U.S. universities. Please, when you're on home leave, stop by and visit the Education USA Center and speak to the advisors there. The most important thing we do is we give information about all accredited U.S. institutions. There's free access to every single accredited institution there. We give the centers books, equipment, and training, and we also nominate advisors for training programs. One of the most important resources that you, as both embassies and universities, can make use of are our regional educational advising coordinators. That's the URL up there for them. They can give you information about regional trends, regional conferences, if you're interested in recruiting from a particular region, if you have questions about transcripts, credit transfers, they're a tremendous resource for you. They train advisors, they conduct conferences, and I'll just go through a couple of the training programs that we have. We bring advisors here every single year to visit your universities. It's a great way to raise the profile of your university overseas, especially since these centers are contacted by thousands of students all the time, and the only way advisors can learn about your university or your state is to visit them. We have campus visit programs and senior advisor training programs. You can also go and visit the regional conferences that we have overseas. Every year we have two or three. This is a picture from our European regional conference in Riga in 2004, and you can see how many advisors are there. If you attend, you can make presentations, and in one region, you can have perhaps 70 advisors from 20 to 30 countries there, and you'll be able to interact with them. The U.S.-based training program, and I'm happy to see USBT campus hosts in the audience, is a wonderful way for you really to introduce your university to advisors and thereby introducing them to the students around the world. This is a picture from the fall program, and as you can see, there are 20 advisors here, 20 different countries, and they go around the U.S. to visit U.S. campuses. If you're an embassy official, you might also want to consider visiting these different offices if you want to strengthen ties between institutions and your countries by calling the admissions office, the international student office, which I think now I'm telling our advisors is the most important office to visit because it's key for students to know that they need to check in as soon as they arrive. One of our pre-campus visit programs, one of the most successful ones has been the Destination Indiana program that has led to many, many areas of cooperation technologically between overseas advising centers and the institutions in Indiana. And I would encourage you in other states also to organize similar programs because it helps students focus on areas and programs that they normally otherwise would not, and it strengthens the bond between overseas centers and U.S. universities. One of the results of the Destination Indiana program recently was a technology workshop in Moscow. We had information about U.S. higher education on the web. It was translated into Russian, Chinese, Arabic, and Spanish. We had representatives there from universities, and we're really looking forward to having the internet as a key tool in virtual consulting. Our logo is tremendously important. It's the one thing that binds us together. Thanks to a gift from the University of Denver, we were able to develop this logo, and we're trying to market it as broadly as possible. You can see when you click on the centers on our website, that all of them should have the Education USA logo as the identifying factor on their website. That's how you can tell they're affiliated with the Department of State, and they offer objective, accurate information about all U.S. higher institutions. This is the Korean Fulbright Commission, Korean American Educational Commission. You'll see the logo at the top. They also have links there to other organizations. I'd encourage you, if you visit Korea, to stop by the Fulbright Commission. One thing you as U.S. universities can do is you can link to Education USA. We want all accredited U.S. institutions to link to us, as the University of South Florida has done, with the statement down there. And if you can't read it, I'll read it for you. It says, for further assistance with the application process and information specific to your country, please contact your local U.S. Embassy, U.S. Consulate, Office of Public Affairs for a referral to an overseas educational advising center near you. That's very important because they do pre-departure orientations. We want students to be as well prepared as they possibly can be when they come to your campuses to study. As you know, we've had a drop in the last couple of years for international students on U.S. campuses. We know this because we give a grant to IIE every year to do the Open Doors report, and that, as you, I'm sure all of you know, is available on the Open Doors website. But what we'd like to do is turn around those statistics, make sure that foreign international students keep coming to the U.S. to study, and we keep having lots of international students as tomorrow's world leaders. So I thank you very much for your attention. I know I'm right before lunch, but thank you.